Dealing ecstasy was there if I wanted it. Hell yeah, let's do it. I'm feeling like a kind of god. I'm above the law. No one could stop this. Boy, was I wrong. Now I'm dealing with the mafia. So here I was in one of America's deadliest jails. These guys are murdering someone in front of my eyes. Game over.
From Wondery, exclusively on Luminary, this is Locked Up Abroad. I'm your host, Jim Clementi. In 1991, Sean Atwood moved from Northern England to Phoenix, Arizona, to make it big in the stock market. He had become interested in trading at a very early age, traveling to visit his aunts in Arizona. Moving immediately following his graduation from university, he quickly became a millionaire and part of the bubbling rage scene of the time. He also started distributing ecstasy, ultimately smuggling up to $2 million of the drugs at a time. After living the high life for a decade, he was finally arrested in 2002. Released early in 2007, he's since turned his life around and now gives talks to school children and other groups about the negative consequences of drugs and crime, and writes books about his experience in prison.
In 1991, I moved to America and I got a job as a stockbroker. It was my dream to make a million in the stock market. And nothing would stop me, nothing at all.
We were very proud of him. He said, "Don't worry, Mum, I'll be a millionaire before no time."
I was basically starting at rock bottom as a stockbroker. There was a guy in a similar boat to me called Matt, who was another rookie. We were working harder than anyone else in the office. We'd be in there from 6 o'clock in the morning till 9 or 10 o'clock at night, day in, day out. I was working such long hours, I was starting to get burnt out. I needed some kind of release to counteract the stress.
How about a drink?
Yeah. He ends up taking me to a club in downtown Phoenix. And the music's going boom, 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 boom. And the goose flesh just rose on my arms. I started remembering taking this drug called ecstasy. It took away all my stress. And I was craving that feeling. So I say to Matt,
"Do you want to buy some ecstasy?"
Matt's response was, "Hell yeah, let's do it." He started looking for somebody, and he gets a hold of this guy with a bull ring through his nose, and we purchased 2 hits off him. 45 minutes after taking it, I just got this completely warm feeling. I know then I'm coming up. All of my stress and worries, all of life's tension just completely melted away. I had the time of my life. I never wanted the party to end. So we're wishing we could take more. But there aren't any more. I learned ecstasy was extremely scarce in Arizona. It wasn't long before me and Matt were clubbing all the time, trying to find out who was selling the drugs. I want to have that feeling back. One night, this guy bounces onto the dance floor with all this energy. So I'm thinking this guy's on some pretty serious quality drugs. I need to talk to him. I followed him outside to where he was getting some fresh air and I said, "Do you know anywhere I can get some ecstasy?"
"Yeah, I can get anything you want."
He produces the pills. I smile to myself now.
Sean, Joey.
I decided I was going to make the purchase. On the weekend, we have a little ecstasy party with this guy, Joey. I'm just thinking how much I missed all this. Stress release, the dancing for hours on end. I wasn't selling them, I was just showing off by buying all these pills and giving them away to my friends. So I'm thinking I missed the cool guy now, but the pills run out. So I'm thinking that we need more pills. From seeing the demand at this party, I started to see the business potential of selling ecstasy. But the most the local dealers could provide was 20 to 50 pills. I say to Joey, how can I buy more pills? He says the local dealers are purchasing them from this guy called Saul out of Los Angeles. Having never done anything like this before, I was extremely nervous about the trustworthiness of Saul. He's high up the drug dealing chain as far as I'm concerned. I'm thinking, this guy's gonna pull a gun out on me and just take my money. But greed for the drugs and greed for the money, all that was driving me on. There's a massive guy, his biceps as big as my head. And I say, I'm Sean, I've come from Phoenix. And he says, come in. There's a gang of tattooed men. They look like they're on steroids. And there's all these weighing scales and slabs of cocaine. Now I'm thinking, what have I got myself into?
Got the money.
And he says that he's going to go and get the pills. And he wanders off to a back room. While he's gone, my tension's mounting. You know, who knows if he's going to come out with pills or if he's going to come out with a gun and stick it in my face. And then my eyes are attracted to something on top of the television. That's a strange-looking ornament. And then it dawns on me that it's a rocket grenade launcher. And then the biggest one out of all of them just puts this spoon in his cocaine and shoves it in my face and says, you need to snort this. It was risky enough getting into a drug deal, but now I'm thinking it's all starting to go wrong. My heart's about to pop a chamber. I'm just so frightened. These guys did not look like the kind of guys you could say no to. So I snort this cocaine. All my throat's getting numb. I'm at the point where I'm almost about to go home and just abandon the mission. But then Saul comes out with the biggest bag of ecstasy pills I've ever seen. It's time for me to get the hell out of Dodge. That night, I threw the most incredible house party. All these people have previously been asking, where's the ecstasy at? Well, hey, it's here now. People just start showing up, buying 10, 20, 50. I'm getting attention all night long. And it's just feeding the madness. It's like something clicked in my brain and there was no going back and I would never be the same. Now, my life is just one big drug-fueled road into insanity. The next morning, I'm lying in bed. I'd got all my money back and I'd made $5,000 profit on top of it as well. I'm thinking, this business experiment is really working out. I could go to the office, work all these hours as a stockbroker and get stressed out. Or do I want to go and make a full-time career out of the party scene and selling ecstasy? It was completely narcissistic and hedonistic. And decided I was done as a stockbroker. It was the way of the party scene from now on. But I had no idea what it was leading to. Now I have to survive as an ecstasy dealer. I'm buying 1,000, 2,000, 10,000 at a time. Joey offered to sell, and he started referring friends of his to me. And Joey suggests, why don't we start throwing raves? Within weeks, I've got hundreds of people working for me, my own security team. It's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger in all directions. After 2 years, millions of dollars worth of ecstasy are being dealt by my organization. I'm living a life of complete luxury. I've gone from feeling like a rock star to a celebrity to now feeling like a kind of god.
Into the master bedroom.
Oh my word.
My parents came out to visit me every so often and I would completely disguise all of the drug dealing from them.
He had a house and then he had an even bigger house because he was doing so well as he stopped broking.
It was unbelievable. We couldn't quite understand it. How did this happen? Maybe the other brokers were lazy. That's the only conclusion I could come to, really.
We thought it was wonderful, and we were really proud of him.
It would pain them ever to find out I was doing any criminal activity. It was my biggest fear, and I would go to the ends of the earth to prevent them from finding out. I knew what the consequences would be. Arrest and imprisonment, but because I got on away with it for so long, it was part of this feeling like I'm above the law. This doesn't have the danger associated with Scarface, that kind of level of drug dealer. Boy, was I wrong. At my raves, I started to notice these new kind of ecstasy dealers appearing in the scene. I'm thinking, who the hell are these guys? Where are they coming from? Where are they getting their ecstasy from? I've got a monopoly on the ecstasy market, and suddenly all these guys are stepping on my toes. That night,
Sean,
I get a call.
Hello?
Someone called the Spaniard wanted to have a meeting with me. He was one of these new type of ecstasy dealers, so I was curious to get to the bottom of these people, so I agreed to meet them. But I had no idea why he wanted to see me. Not knowing what I'm getting into, I take one of my bouncers with me. We go into the bar.
You guys hold it.
It was obvious that I was in the presence of some serious gangsters.
Move it. Get out of here.
I was opening a door onto a whole new dangerous world I had no idea about.
Easy, yeah.
He introduces me to the Spaniard. He's nowhere near as big as this other guy, but he looks like a formidable character. The Spaniard says to me, "Look, we know you sell a lot of ecstasy.
Why don't you start buying your pills through us?"
I'm thinking, I've been in business for a lot longer than them. This should not be happening. So I say to them,
"I'd rather stay with my own product."
And he says,
"Don't you know who we work for?"
"We work for Sammy the Bull, and one call to him,
and we can have you taken out to the desert."
I knew from the news that Sammy the Bull was an underboss for the Gambino crime family, and he'd murdered up to 24 people. What have I got myself into? Now I'm dealing with the mafia. I don't want to get killed over this. I'd rather just get out the way. So, and I say,
"Look, we didn't come here to cause any trouble today.
The ecstasy market is big enough for us to coexist, and we don't need to be having any problems."
"I'm sorry. I'm not interested."
He's just staring me right in the face. And he says,
"Thank you for your time, Sean."
It's time for me to get the hell out. Knowing I'd rejected the offer, I was wondering how long the peace would last. This was the Italian mafia now. These guys don't mess around. In the middle of the night, I get a call.
"Hello, Mikey."
My top sales guy has had his teeth knocked out by Sammy the Bull's crew. To make it worse, there's someone in town offering $10,000 for my head on a silver platter. Now it's all getting completely out of control. At this point, it's hitting home that I'm not above the dangers of this lifestyle that I've been leading. The world I was in now was like the Wild West. I needed to defend myself. I went to a pawn shop. I purchased a shotgun. I'd seen all these gangster movies, the Italian mafia and all that stuff, but it wasn't real to me. These people now were real to me, and they were lethal gangsters. On the weekend, my parents came out to visit me again, and we're all in the living room of my house watching a video. And there's a knock at the door. The banging just went right through me. And I'm thinking, someone's gonna knock the door down.
Restart the video, keep watching it.
My whole body's just trembling. I'm thinking, if I answer the door with this shotgun, these people are going to be intimidated. I was so scared, I was about ready to jump out of my skin. I go to the door, I look through the peephole, and I see these grungy-looking, drug-taking types. I'm thinking, what's going on here? So I open the door with the shotgun, and they say, "We're here looking for Joey." And I said, "Joey doesn't live here. This is my house." So I'm thinking, on the scale of problems, this is low down on the scale, and I'm immediately, the relief is washing over me. But as I'm walking back to the closet with a shotgun, my parents' heads are turned. I nearly fell off the chair. I couldn't believe this.
It was quite shocking to see him with this gun.
I didn't know who it was at the door.
I say, in America, a lot of people have got guns in their cars and their houses. It's normal out here. It's not like it is in England.
It's okay.
I accepted that.
It's quite scary seeing your son with a shotgun, but he gave an explanation that we accepted. But after that visit, I did feel concerned about him.
They've bought my story, and life is going to go on. I had no idea it was all going to come crashing down. About a week later, I'm driving home from one of my dealer's houses, and I see this dark car following me. Every time I turn, he turns. I definitely know he's following me. I was in a twin turbo sports car, so I put my foot down and I start driving like a maniac. And he's still coming after me, he's still on my tail. So I start running stop signs, running red lights. I'm terrified. No, my life's on the line. As soon as I can't see him behind me in the mirror, I pull over, duck down in my seat, heart going like crazy, and then you hear his car coming by me. I've got rid of him, finally. This is all getting way out of control. Someone wants to kill me. How much more of this can I take? All of the glitz, glamour of feeling ecstasy has gone. Feeling really sick, getting paranoid, hearing things that aren't there. I'm into the dark side of drugs. I got so scared. It was at a level that it was in my best interest to stop it now before I seriously got hurt. I decided to give up the drugs business. I packed all my stuff up and I moved town.
Take care of it.
A lot of the material things that I'd acquired, I had to sell off at this point. So I went back to stock market investing on the internet. I was clean of the business, I was out of the gangster lifestyle. I felt much safer now, because I'm not going to be a target. My parents would never find out now, they would never be hurt by it. But I was wrong. On May 16th, 2002, I get up early to place an options trade on the computer. And there's a knock at the door. I jump up from the computer. I look through the peephole and it's blacked out. My worst fear is being realized at this moment. They're gonna kill me. And boom! Hands above your heads! On the ground now! It's like it all goes in slow motion now in my head. I thought I got away with it. I was mistaken. Everything I ever did wrong, the price is here, right now, on my doorstep. Game over. I was taken to Towers Jail as a medium security remand prisoner. It's just razor wire and prison buildings. Just sweating, nervous, wondering what's going to happen when I get inside here. They take us in a room, black and white striped jail outfit behind us, and they say, put the outfit on behind you. And I'm thinking, perhaps if they don't find any drugs, there's nothing they can do, they're gonna have to release me at some point. You know, I'm just grasping onto that hope. I don't realize that all the sins of my past are about to catch up with me. From the police paperwork, I learned that there was a multi-agency investigation that had been going on 5 or 6 years against me. And it said that Sean Atwood was an ecstasy kingpin, and it's got all of these charges on it. Had hundreds of people working for him over the years.
So many aliases.
He's not a US citizen.
Drug
we investigated for years. He would completely disappear. Pictures were taken of license plates. People's trash cans were gone through. It turns out that the people chasing me in those cars were undercover cops. It took my breath away that they'd gone to all these lengths just to take me down. And then I see it. Atwood is facing a maximum 200-year sentence.
200 years?
My life was over. I'm escorted down a corridor. All these massive tattooed guys, like piranhas scenting blood. They're pre-selecting who they're gonna rape, who they're gonna rob. It's like something out of a horror movie. So I go up to a cell, and there's these three skinheads, like, come over here and explain yourself. I'm thinking, you've got to get that look of fear off your face because you're asking to be preyed on. They tell me to go in the cell. These guys did not look like the kind of guys you could say no to. Can't stop myself from trembling because I'm so scared. First thing they say is, what are your charges? And I say, I was raided this morning by a SWAT team. I've got a list of charges, but I don't fully understand what they all mean. And they're like, are you a chomo? A what?
A child molester!
And they start getting really aggressive with me.
I asked you a question!
What's your charges? What's your charges?
What are your charges?
What are your charges?
I'm just absolutely shaking more than I've ever shook in my life.
What the hell are your charges?
I'm a drug dealer! I was a drug dealer, okay? I sold drugs.
So I start telling them I was throwing raves. I was dealing ecstasy. I'm admitting to committing a crime here, but I'm thinking I'm more scared of these guys beating me up right now than I am of someone overhearing this. I've got to get out of this cell at all costs. But they left. But I think this is my world now. The next morning, I wake up. I hear this noise behind me. All these guys come dashing out of their cells. Thinking, what's going on here? There's this figure on the floor in the shower, and the skinheads are just punching and kicking and stomping on this guy. Crack, 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 crack. The guards are nowhere to be seen. All of a sudden, his eyes meet mine. There's a plea for helping them. And it just completely freezes me. These guys are murdering someone in front of my eyes. The stakes have just got a whole lot higher. People actually murder people in here. And it's taking my shock and fear factor to a whole new level. My main threat now is the threat to my life. Who am I going to turn to get me out of this situation? I'm going to have to turn to my parents. I'm dreading what's about to happen. My biggest fear in the world is my parents finding out about the trouble that I'm in. And I just don't want to break their hearts. But there's just no one else I can turn to right now.
One evening, I was sat on the settee and the phone rang.
Now I'm feeling sick in my stomach. I've just got that horrible feeling, you know, that I'm going to puke. My mum answers the phone and I say...
Hi, Mum, it's Sean.
He's been arrested on serious drugs charges. It didn't register. I went quiet.
I just couldn't believe it. I thought there was a mistake. I thought that he's going to bad company. It's their fault. It's not Sean. No, it can't possibly be Sean.
I feel like I fired a missile across the Atlantic Ocean. My heart was breaking to hear my mum having to suffer because of my crimes and what I'd done.
Sean?
The line went dead, and it was just like all our lives had been turned inside out.
Putting my parents through that was the lowest point in my life ever. I cut the deal for 9.5 years. And I considered myself lucky after everything I'd done over the years. Now, it is raw survival of the fittest, and they're looking for lame animals to take down. The food we had to eat there was moldy and rotten. So food poisoning was common. There's hundreds of guys showing needles and tattoo instruments. It was just rife with disease, AIDS, TB. We get these skin infections and bed sores that itch and bleed. The place was a living hell. How on earth am I going to survive? I'm not a tough guy. The longer I was spending in captivity, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. All the human rights violations were disgusting me. So here I was in one of America's deadliest jails. I started thinking, the world has no idea what's really going on in here. Maybe the world should know. I started to make a diary of what was going on in there. Writing about the infestations, the food, the violence. I'm on a mission to bring awareness to the world. But I can't put these things in the mail because the guards can open your mail. So I recruited my aunt. My aunt would come and visit me on the weekends. And I hid what I wrote in legal paperwork. I could release property to my aunt through the visitation guards. The whole time I'm watching the guard out the corner of my eye because this stuff is on his table. My heart is going like crazy. Is he going to search it? Is he not going to search it? He doesn't search it. hands it to her. My stress just collapses. She typed what I'd written up, and that's how my blog, John's Jail Journal, started. If we did it under a fake name, John's Jail Journal, the guards wouldn't know who I was.
I couldn't believe some of the things he was writing. I realised that this was hell on earth.
It was unreal. It was like it was happening to somebody else. But in a way it helped because it made me feel close to him.
I spent all day writing. My whole day revolved around that. It was a bridge to the outside world. So now the world was hearing about my life and the lives of the other prisoners. And it went on to attract all this media attention to the conditions in the jail. I thought I could get these conditions changed and things would be improved. And I feel like I did. Having my life return to me after everything I've been through, it was the happiest day of my life. And you're just like, wow, you know, this is the free world. I just had this overwhelming sense of liberation.
You believe it?
He survived nearly 6 years in probably the toughest place anyone could ever be. I wouldn't have lasted 6 months.
I wanted to lock him in the house and keep him in the house, keep him safe. I suppose all mothers have that feeling with their children.
Biggest regret in my life is the hurt and pain I caused to my parents. And if I could change that, if I could take it all back and reverse my life, I would. I credit incarceration for strengthening me as a person and sending my life in this whole new positive direction. And I wake up with a smile on my face now. Really happy to be a free man, yes.
Thank you for listening to Locked Up Abroad, exclusively on Luminary from Wondery, the network behind Dr. Death, Dirty John, and Business Wars. To listen to more great shows like Locked Up Abroad, visit luminary.audio and wondery.com. Locked Up Abroad was produced by Raw TV Limited for National Geographic channels. Copyright 2013. All rights reserved. Distributed under license from Fox Networks Group Content Distribution UK Limited. Our audio adaptation is edited by Daniel Carissimi. Our producer is Donna Himes. Our executive producers are Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.